ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 एवं गुरु ज्ञा इच्छाव्या
एवं गुरु ज्ञा इच्छाव्या
इष्टमे शिक्षितामथि
इष्टमे शिक्षितामथि
स्वात्मोकषि शिक्षितं बोधिं
स्वात्मोकषि शिक्षितं बोधिं
विनुमे वदता प्रभो
विनुमे वदता प्रभो.
Now I'm going to do something radical and different. I'm not going to ask you to chant. It's just a little late already. Listen to this. Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Rubhya.
Rubhya. From the spiritual masters.
From the spiritual masters.
Etabhya.
Etabhya.
From these.
From these.
Isha.
Isha.
This.
This.
Nay.
Nay.
By me.
By me.
Shikshita.
Shikshita.
Learn.
Learn.
Mati.
Mati.
Knowledge.
Knowledge.
Now we're going to approach the next guru. Because this sequence is about Dutatraya, the Avaduta, who some, and it's quite amazing if you think about it, considering what motivates us for action, is very often so, how to say it politely, it's financial and materialistic. And we could, that's polite. I could also say, compared to what Dattatreya is teaching, it's quite foolish to be motivated by these considerations. Why? Because Dattatreya was lying on the ground like Agajara. What is Agajara? Python. And the python's way of catching food or eating or maintaining himself is what? He just lies down, and opens his mouth, and right, basically he waits for the food to come, and then he, or sometimes they also crush the food and then, and he had adopted this, what's it called, Agajara Vritti, the mentality. He didn't become a python, obviously, but he adopted the vritti or the mentality of a python. And yet, because if we think about what would happen if I didn't work so hard to feed myself and those who depended on me, we tend to think what will happen is we'll all starve and we'll all be so miserable. And that's what so struck the king, is this person, this Avaduta, who wasn't at all endeavoring to maintain himself. He was fat, plump, and he was healthy, and not only that, he was happy. So this is so inconceivable. It was so inconceivable. It is so inconceivable. Do you know what I mean? Just to like completely depend on Krishna. This vritti, this mentality is so incredible that the king Yadu, not the king, but Yadu Maharaj, this great soul, he says, where did you learn this consciousness? And now what this Avaduta Dattatreya is explaining is where he learned it. And he didn't learn it from anything but that which we also see directly before our eyes. So he said, I have had many gurus. And indeed, if our consciousness is ready, if it is awake, if it is subtle, if it is desiring to learn, the whole universe will teach us. The whole universe will teach us how to depend on Krishna and to be Krishna conscious. There's, and His Holiness Govinda Maharaj used to say, quoting a Western poem, "Water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink." Now, what is the meaning of that in the spiritual context? Because that is a lamentation of someone who's dying for thirst on a boat in the ocean, the saltwater ocean. So it's true, clearly, that there's water, water everywhere, but you can't drink anything because the salt in the water, in the saltwater ocean, will not quench your thirst, and it will not satisfy your body, and it will not be healthy for you. So what is the meaning that for that in a spiritual sense? It's that the Krishna's mercy, Krishna's nourishment is everywhere, at all times, everywhere, and yet we find ourselves thirsting because we're not getting the nourishment that we need. So now, the Rajputa is going to speak to Yadu, the king, and he's going to tell him, reveal to him, another guru. Now the last two were what? What were the last two gurus? The last one was? Was. And why was the, what did he learn from the was? By whatever one absorbs one's consciousness in, one becomes that in this life, practically speaking, and then physically in the next life. When we were in the university, we were Beatle fans. Just how dangerous is that? Having one's consciousness absorbed in Beatles, you become, develop Beatle consciousness. And then, before that, before the wasp, where who had captured the insect and brought him to his hive, and the insect, out of fear, was always thinking about the wasp, and then he attained that type of consciousness because he was thinking about it. Is this a positive thing? Is it a negative thing? Or we could just say that it is an essential thing. Because this is the law of nature. And if we don't know the law, we get ourselves into trouble. Whose responsibility is it to know the law? It is our own responsibility. Ignorance is not an excuse. Prabhupada used to say this. You drive on the, in the United States, of course they drive on the right side of the road. And India or Australia on the left side of the road. Of course in India they drive on both sides of the road. It's true, isn't it?
Okay.
But not at the same time. Only Krishna can do that. So if you drive on the thinking, if you come from the United States, and just I'll drive on the right side because that's what we do here. And then when the policeman catches you for driving on the wrong side of the road, and you say, and there's a big accident and everything, and the cars collide, and you say, "Oh, I didn't know." And everyone's going to say, "Okay, he didn't know, it's all right." It's all right. No, not at all. It's our duty, it's our responsibility to know what the law is. And here, in that segment on the wasp, the law was very clearly stated. And what was the law?
What was the law? Were you here during wash classes? What was the law? Yes, exactly. That's the point. Be very, very careful. Not in the sense of, or maybe putting it, because careful implies fearful, but also what we should look at it is be selective on what we actually absorb our consciousness in. Selective. We should carefully choose what we absorb our consciousness in, because we will become that, practically speaking. So it is an important law to be aware of, because our own existence depends on it. It is very, very positive for those fortunate souls who can absorb their consciousness in higher things, in higher topics, in spiritual topics. And it is a very consequential very sad if someone doesn't use this law to its own advantage. And what's also sad, I find, is that now, especially because we spoke about it yesterday, I'm conscious of this law, and then my tendency is when I walk out the door, I don't bring this consciousness with me, that how important it is for me to be chanting Krishna's names, or I forget so quickly. This is unfortunate for me. And what was the principle right before the wasp?
Spider.
The spider. And what was the point of this? What did the other dutta learn from the spider?
It spreads its web and takes it back.
The web comes from him, he plays in it for some time, and then he withdraws it back into him. And that spiderness was compared to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because all of existence comes from him. And he does his leelas in it for some time, and then he withdraws the entire material existence back into him. So this is very wonderful, because it's really telling us who is the one who is worthwhile of absorbing our consciousness in. Just think about what that means. Think of, because for example, Mother Yasoda looked in Krishna's mouth, and what did she observe? Actually, it was in Krishna's belly that she saw it. She saw all the universes, and this is actually a wonderful, wonderful pastime, and perhaps sometime while I'm here I'd like to speak about it, but not at this moment. Maybe this afternoon at the program. I have to figure out how to squeeze this pastime into the Rath Yatra concept. How am I going to link that? I'll meditate on it. But just think about what it means that everything in existence and comes into existence from Krishna, and then stays for some time. Actually, during the length of time of Krishna's breathing between his exhale and his inhale, all of in existence is there, and then. It's gone within him. Now that is something to think about. Because what we consider, if someone said to you, because everyone of course wants to be wealthy, etc., etc., but if someone said to you, you can be wealthy for a breath, you can be a billionaire, a gigabillionaire, terabillionaire, the whole thing. But only for one breath. So when we look at reality in an illusory way, based on a very faulty and limited conception of time, what is unimportant seems very important, and what is urgent when we're looking at it from the point of view of very finite, limited time. What appears urgent is urgent, but when you look at it from the point of view of this example of the spider and of Mahavishnu, Karanadaksha Vishnu, breathing in, out and breathing in, and all of material existence, then our perspective on what is important and what is not important clearly changes. And our perspective on what a problem is and what pleasure is, it changes with our conception of time. So this sage, Dattatreya Muni, he learned these things, but he did not forget them. He actually applied them to his existence, and he let what he learned from the universal gurus that he was perceiving right before his eyes, he let these guide his life. Now, that in and of itself is an amazing concept. How strong, serious, and sincere one has to be to allow these kind of principles to actually guide one's life. Oh. I have to make sure I give it back because the owner's name is right on it. You can see also Krishna. Well, just see the instruction we're going to get, because this is actually a book model, and this is the essential instruction right on it. Some words from Srila Prabhupada, from the Bhagavad Gita. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. Because if one does that, things are in one's right perspective, in perspective. And if one doesn't do that, one's position is actually quite precarious, because why? Why is one's position precarious if one doesn't remember Krishna or God? Or I mean, there's many reasons for this, but anyone wants to venture forward a reason? We'll be under the control of Maya. What's another reason for always remembering Krishna?
We're disconnected from the root.
Yeah, we're disconnected from our root. We're an illusion, because everything, in the example of the spider, we learn that in fact everything has a connection with Krishna. So it is reality to see things in relationship with Krishna. And if you see something in relationship with Krishna, then you remember Krishna. And what is it called if you don't see reality?
Illusion.
And what happens, unfortunately, is we become intoxicated by our tendency to want to exploit the material world, and therefore we don't see Krishna, because everything is in connection with him and he's the supreme enjoyer, and rather we see ourselves as the enjoyer and the exploiter and the controller of material energy, and we are an illusion. And we struggle for existence in this way. We struggle. But no matter how much we struggle, we're going to lose in the struggle for existence, because we're identifying, I'm starting to move into the next topic already, the next guru. So it's important not only to, of course, learn from the Bhagavatam and the spiritual masters that are here, but we should apply the principles that we learn. Which is more important, to learn or to apply? This false dilemma. I've caught you in my trap. How could you apply it without learning it first? This is often what we try to do also. You fell right into my trap. But don't worry about it. You're free now. Okay, but listen. So here is the verse. O King, from these spiritual masters I have acquired great wisdom. Great wisdom. Not only knowledge, but applied knowledge is vijnana, wisdom, science. It becomes scientific when it's applied. Now please listen, Natatheya, Muni says. So he's requesting us to please listen. As I explain what I learned from my own body. Now usually we think bodily consciousness is so bad, we criticize its illusion. But what can we learn from our body? Do you know what we can learn from our body? Wait, just wait. You try to avoid my trap. Because he says, please listen. And if we listen, we'll learn. So this is what he says. Deho guru is thus. The body as the guru. Mama vidakti, because of detachment. And vivek, intelligence, discrimination, which facilitates detachment. That's what he's going to learn. Vivek hetur. Hetur means cause. If we learn from our body, we will become detached. And if we don't learn from our body, we will not learn detachment, and naturally we will remain attached. And if we remain attached to our body, are we going to be happy? We're going to become so terrified, slowly or quickly. Why? Because this body, if we're attached to our body, to ourselves, and we place all our hope in the sinking ship of our body, our hope will drown our existence. We are considering ourselves the body and become overly attached to the body, we will drown in the ocean of material existence, because no one wants their body to disintegrate. But yet no one since the beginning of time has been able to stop their body from disintegrating. It's very, very weighty, actually. The science, the technology, medical science, this science, we can replace our hip, we can replace our liver even, kidneys, what else can we replace? Knees, heart, you can replace your heart. There are some people that I, never mind. I was going to suggest heart transplants for some people. Daksha, he had a head transplant. That's true. It's been done already. Even before medical, contemporary medical science. Why did Daksha get a head transplant? And what did he become? He lost his head in that sense. And what head did he get replaced? Goat. Why? Why did he get a goat head? What was the mentality of a goat head? So how does a goat, why is a goat the appropriate head? He was making the sacrifice. And he ended up being sacrificed. He did so badly. He was so offensive. And you ask a person, would you like a goat's head? You know, a person with that mentality, would you like a goat's head? I know what they say too. Nah. So here in this verse, if we become too attached to our bodies and think of the body of us as ourselves, we must necessarily suffer. Because there is no way, despite the promises of modern medical sciences, that we will live forever in this body. It must die, the body must die. And we, on the other hand, are eternal. So what a frustrating situation for the eternal soul to be trapped within a temporary, disintegrating material body. What a frustration for the soul. You ask, you could ask yourself, but how old do you feel like inside? I won't ask you, because you're... How old do you feel like inside? Mahatma, we'll ask you. How old do you feel inside?
5 years old.
5 years old? That explains everything. But we all feel different ages inside. How old do you feel inside? Just ask yourself. I mean, typically someone feels 16, 17, like that. Even when one is 80, the soul doesn't become old. But one's ability to satisfy one's material desire, how old do you feel inside?
16.
And how old are you? How old is your body?
21.
The distance increases, 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 increases. Between what we feel like and how old the body actually is. So, the material body is also my spiritual master because, Dr. Sabini says, it teaches me detachment. Being subject to creation and destruction, it always comes to a painful end. I mean, this isn't what people want to hear. Yet, it's reality. The body always comes to a painful end. But it's not what we want to hear. We want to forget, more than anything else, we want to forget this fact that the body must die, either today or the next day, or the next day, or the next day, or the next day, or the next day. It is subject to creation and destruction, and it always, always comes to a painful end. Thus, although using my body to acquire knowledge, Prahlad Maharaj said this, Komaram Acharat Pragyo Dhaman Bhagavatarina Dolabam Manusha Dhamma Tarap Abhruvam Artitam. One to a temporary material body, a temporary human body in a human birth, although it is temporary like every other body, still there is a blessing attached to the temporary human body, is that it can, through the human body it can attain the eternal. Do we really believe that? Are we ready to seriously and sincerely act on that principle? And that doesn't mean that immediately, because one must know the depths of one's sincerity and capacity, it doesn't mean, I mean, if we could, like the Kadvanga Maharaj, he surrendered him to the Supreme Lord, he found out what caused him to surrender.
Yes. If there's anything that will make us sincere and serious, it's that.
Finding out that my life is going to end very quickly, in a moment, not all Krishna, Krishna.
That tends to make us sincere and serious. But if we're not that sincere and serious at this point, it doesn't mean that I have to become that serious or I should do nothing. It means that we should act in such a way that we realize the situation about our life. If we're extremely pious, extremely sincere and serious, we'll give up everything, just like the dying man who knows, or the man who knows that finds out that he has only a moment to live. Then he does that. But usually we can't do that. We could say unfortunately, but that's the reality of the situation. So therefore we should live in such a way so that we don't, first of all, go in the opposite direction of spiritual life, because it's our life. Our life is at stake. We, the soul, are at stake. Our eternity is at stake for us. But we should live in such a way that we move closer to that. But we should also know that the sand within the hourglass of our life is moving. So there is a sense of urgency. Just like some of us wear sweaters with the logo 09. What is the significance of that? It means that this is 09. It's 2009 according to that calculation. But it was just so recently that 2009 began, and then 2008 and 20. It was all so quick. It's all passing so quickly. In fact. Time passes quickly, so the sand is moving through our life. And every year means that we are a year closer to the time when we will leave this world. So therefore, although we should gradually, for most of us, are sincere and serious enough to immediately give ourselves to Krishna in that way and take it up with full intense, laser-like determination, knowing the reality that the material body must have a painful end, and that Krishna comes from everything comes from Krishna, and that what I'm meditating upon determines my existence. So as we move towards that close, slowly perhaps, we should also know that there's a sense of urgency in that. Because our time is moving. Time is moving. Kalosmin lokachaya kriya. Krishna says, Kalosmi, I am time that has come. To do what? To destroy. It is ferocious. It is ferocious. The time factor, which is a shakti of the Paramatma, is ferocious. It is non-relenting. It is not compassionate, even. It is impersonal. It is heavy. So we should also keep that in mind and not develop too much attachment, and use our life to develop attachment for means, because it's what we're attached to. This is how we find out what we're attached to, is find out where our consciousness is absorbed. Because our consciousness will naturally become absorbed in what we're attached to. Thus, although using my body, my temporary material body, to acquire knowledge, I always remember that it will ultimately be consumed by others. And remaining detached, I move about in this world. Prabhupada once said, someone said about intoxication, he said, compared
I'm going to ask you what he meant by this, so please listen carefully. Compared to our identification with the body, all other intoxications are just like salt and pepper. What is the meaning of that? Raise your hand if you'd like to say, and I'll decide who. Compared to our identification with our body, other intoxications are like salt and pepper. Only three people want to comment on this. I'm going to get really stubborn. Now, come on. Think about it. Be brave. Four. Five. Now we're doing better. Six, seven, eight, nine. Okay. Ten. Okay. Who was the first one to raise their hand? Oh, you were you then both of you. Hello? You first speak.
Salt and pepper is not the main course.
Salt and pepper is not the main thing. Yeah, exactly. No one. I've heard of a salt-free diet, but I've never heard of an only salt diet. No one can live just on salt. It will not sustain us. It's just an extra. It's an important extra to us, but it's an extra.
Salt and pepper always increases flavor of what there is.
Of the other intoxication. Yes, yes. Yes.
Oh, I was just going to say that the body needs the most intoxicating.
Oh. Yes, because this, my senses. Because the senses, body is a configuration, a composition of senses. Senses, that's basically what it is. Did you also?
Salt and pepper without anything else is quite distasteful. Similarly, if you have other attachments without attachment to the body, it's quite distasteful.
Yeah, the prime attachment is our body. This is me. One time years ago, I met. My only visit to Seoul, Korea, this was many, many years ago, 1970. Time passed quickly. There was a U.S. Army man there. A friend from Seoul, Korea is not here today. But there was a U.S. Army man who saw me and he saw I was a devotee. And he said to me, I don't have to join something like this. I know who I am. So I said, well, who are you? He said, I'm me. That was a very deep answer. I'm me. Well, who is that me? Who is that me? Basically, he meant, this is me. I have a sense, a full sense of myself, and I feel I don't lack anything. But this is the identification. It's me as the body. And how one must suffer. If that identification is the limit to the knowledge that one has. So therefore Prabhupada said, who is the best Western philosopher? Does anyone know who Prabhupada said was the best Western philosopher? Socrates, because he knew, he was deeply convinced that he was not his body. He knew that, and he was actually very humble. The story of Socrates is very interesting because it describes how there was a mystical oracle, a future-telling system or something in Oracle. Everyone knows Oracle, but not that Oracle. This is the original Oracle. So, whatever question they would ask you, you would ask the oracle, it would tell you the answer in a riddle. So, they asked, one man went, who was a friend of Socrates when he was a young boy, and he asked the oracle, is there anyone more wise in the city of Athens than Socrates? And the oracle said, no. And Socrates couldn't believe this. He knew the oracle was always correct, but he couldn't believe this because he felt he didn't know anything. So he went around asking people, do you have, you know, what is wisdom? You know, what is virtue? What is the proper way to act? And he saw that they thought they knew things, but they didn't actually know anything. So his conclusion was, yes, it's true. At least I have one bit of wisdom, but I know I don't know anything. And these people think they know something and they know nothing, and they don't even know that they don't, that they know nothing. So I guess I am the most wise person. But he also, being very much like a gyani, he was fixed in the conception. He didn't know about the Supreme Lord. He knew that he didn't know about the Supreme Lord. And he knew, in other words, he knew that he wasn't his body. And other people thought that they knew who they were, but they thought they were their body. And he knew that he didn't know who he was, but he knew he wasn't his body. But in Krishna consciousness, using this Vedic wisdom, especially as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can know that we are not our body, but we know who we are. And who we are is actually very wonderful. Mm-hmm. And this is actually the essence of the process of detaching ourselves from the material body. Because if a beggar, he may know he's very poor, but all he has is 50 cents or 17 rupees. Even though it's so little, if that's all he has, he's going to hold on to it very tightly. So if all we know is that we are not our body, we are not going to become detached from the body, practically speaking. But if we know who we are, and we increase our desire to be that, because it is so wonderful to act on that level, then our detachment from the lesser thing will increase, because our attachment for our relationship with Krishna will increase and blossom. And the pace of our relationship as servants of Radha Balabha, of Gornatai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, is sweet. It is the most sweet. And therefore it behooves us, we should develop our attachment so we can develop our detachment also. So let me continue. I always remember that it will ultimately be consumed by others, the body. And remaining detached, I move about in this world. He said he used it to gain knowledge, to gain spiritual advancement. He used his body. But he remained detached from it. And it's wise to be detached from it. Why is it wise? Because it's going to be taken from us. It must be taken from us. Does anyone doubt this? We may have so many philosophical doubts, but no one doubts this point. The body must be taken from us. The atheist materialist thinks that when the body dies, when the body is taken from us, the sense of us also dies. We no longer exist or feel like we exist, and there's nothing. But Krishna doesn't agree with this, because it doesn't tally with our experience. It doesn't equal our experience either, because I have a feeling of existence, and I've already changed my body from boyhood to youth. What verse? The first verse we all learn usually. The Venus men, Komaram, boyhood to youth. And then Jara, I've already changed my body, even in this life. I've already changed my body in this life. And if you saw a picture of me, at 4 years old or 2 years old or 1 day old, you would think clearly that you've changed your body. And if we identify me as the body, I think I'm my body, I have to ask the question, well, if I'm my body, which body am I? If that was me when I was 4, and that was me when I was 16, and that was me when I was 35 and 45 and 60, 62, so which one was really me? If I'm my body, which body am I? And the answer is, Krishna's answer is, that no. None of them were you actually. You identified with them being you, but none were actually you. And you should wake up to who you are. Instead of having this misidentification with the body, you have to wake up to who you are so you can find some real pleasure in relationship, Krishna would say, to me. Because that is our real life. This is our real life. Purport. The words yatatatapi are significant in this verse. Although the body bestows great benefit by enabling one to learn about this world, but we don't usually think that that's the purpose of our life, to learn about this world. We think the body's purpose is to give us pleasure. So just see how we are setting ourselves up to suffer if we think that the body's purpose is to give us pleasure and it's going to die. Then we are setting ourselves up for such a great disappointment. Because it's illusion. And no matter how many times we hear that the body is going to die, we don't live our life in that way. We live our life, we tend to live our life in such a way, thinking that the body is going to live forever. I've experienced this. We tend to live in such a way, and think in such a way, as if the body is going to live forever. And then someday we get a stroke. And then suddenly we're forced to confront the fact that, hey, that my body is going to die. And that confrontation, when the face of death appears before us, it's terrifying. Because of our attachment to the body as ourself, and then we don't know who we are. And if the body, who am I then? And what will I be? And because of that ignorance and fear and lack of depth of realization, terror enters the heart. Because we have such an intimate connection with our body for so many years. And we don't have depth of realization about what's happening next. So terror enters the heart. Okay, I guess we can keep this verse on. No, I'll continue the purport in this minute. One should always remember its unhappy, inevitable future, the body. If cremated, the body is burnt to ashes by fire. If lost in a lonely place, it is consumed by jackals and vultures. If it is buried in a luxurious coffin, it decomposes and it is consumed by insignificant insects and worms. I mean, this is such bad news. It's shocking. And if you just imagine yourself being consumed by insects and worms. I mean, or imagine those who you love being consumed. It's a terrible thought, but then, because we see them as it, and ourselves as our body. But if we see in a transcendental way, then everything is different, in a spiritual way based on knowledge. So it is so important that we get transcendental knowledge, and it's so important that Right now, this world that we see and the illusion seems more real than Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna is wandering around playing his flute and herding the cows and wandering around, and Mother Yasoda is coming to him and saying, Krishna, make sure that you have enough to eat and be very, very careful where you walk. And Balaram, you have to protect Krishna. And the gopis, and who else protects Krishna? Sridham, Sudham, and there's one. And who is Ambika, the nurse's son? What was his name? Vijay, that's why, yes, Vijay. And she had a child who she specifically wanted to be strong because she loved Krishna so much. She wanted to have a strong son who would be able to protect Krishna as a servant of Krishna. So she had a son named Vijay who was so strong, and Vijay would always be there, and he could speak very loudly and with great strength. Good name. So, and the gopis would be just, when Krishna would go out with the cowherd boys, their hearts would be breaking, and they would just think about him all day long, wandering in the park. So that seems far away, and this seems so close. And we have to reverse that. So this seems insignificant and dreamlike in one sense, even though we have to practically live in it and deal with it, not walk around dreaming all day long, you know, and then walking through the walls and not do our service and our work properly and take care of our responsibility. But it has to become, we have to see the nature of this world as temporary, always shifting, and we have to gain enough experience by the grace of the Bhagavatam, by the grace of the deities, by the grace of the holy name, by the grace of Guru and Vaishnavas, by the grace of holy places. We have to gain enough mercy so that is real to us. Or else how can we find shelter? How can we find shelter there if here is the thing that's real for us? Well, naturally, no matter how much philosophy we hear, we'll naturally look for our shelter here in this world. But what is it in this world that we can will actually give us shelter? What does shelter mean? In Sanskrit, it is ashraya. What does shelter mean?
Protection.
Primarily protection, where we can go and know that we are safe and cared for. So what in this world, if we look at this world, not even spiritually, but just from the point of view of watching the time element gradually change and shift and destroy so many things, what in this world will give us shelter? Protection, actually. What in this world will give us? So we have to, all of us, myself included, we have to really move towards reality. Otherwise, if we try to find shelter in this world and we see something happening, we have to forget it. And we have to take shelter of illusion. And if there is a struggle between illusion and reality, which is going to win? If there's a struggle between darkness and light, light, reality always wins. Every time. And if you're not convinced that I'm correct, that reality always wins, we have a very simple test that we recommend people take, is that make believe that this wall over here in your mind, try to convince yourself that this wall is soft and porous and you can walk right through it, and then get it real, try to fix it, get yourself in that illusion that this wall is soft and porous, and then walk, or if you're very convinced, run right into it. Put your hands behind your back. This is going to win. Reality is going to win. The wall isn't soft and porous like a cloud in the sky when you're in a plane. No, it's not like that. Again, some of us are scientists, so we need direct experiential evidence. So we have this also. Okay, thank you very much. Questions, comments? 5 minutes worth.
You talk about the country was looking everywhere, what we all see as well, that we are not receptive or we are not seeing that message is coming to us. So what is the prerequisite that we have that learning attitude? What is the prerequisite for a conditioned soul so that he sees the things as they are?
Actually, if we are intelligent, we see the negative aspects of things as they are. But that's not sufficient. It is necessary, but not sufficient. Therefore we say that prayer, Om Janatim Handasya Janatana Salataya Chaksusa Nirtantina Tasma Sri Guru Dhanama. Our eyes are closed, and we cannot see. Unless someone whose eyes are open tells us what reality is like, and we'll not be able to see. So we always thank Srila Prabhupada for that. We will not be able to see. Suffering is insufficient. But we need transcendental spiritual positive knowledge. And then we can see. Then we can see how the modes of material nature are controlling everything. We study the Bhagavad Gita. Then we see the transition of the body, and see the soul is the same. But we can't see this by ourselves. We have to speak of seeing Krishna. So the prerequisite is some humility and some intelligence, and then hearing and purification. Because we see according to our consciousness. The gross seeing is based on the subtle conceptions. So we have to purify and change our conceptions. And then, for the great devotees who have purified conceptions, positive conceptions, pure spiritual conceptions, they see Krishna everywhere, which was this verse. Always remember Krishna, never forget him, or for one who sees me everywhere and is never lost to me. Yamam pasati sabhasa sabham chayam pasati sasamena pulasati. I'm never lost to asyaham sulabha. If we learn to see Krishna everywhere, then he's easy to attain. Because he's always connected to Krishna yoga. That takes prerequisites, as we were saying, and then sincerity and seriousness. Because if we want to be covered by illusion due to our material attachments, Krishna will supply us illusory consciousness, illusioned consciousness, and then we'll see illusion everywhere we look. We'll see faltering. So what was my answer to your question? What was my answer to your question?
Hearing the right things.
And mercy too. Mercy of the Guru and Vaishnavas. Any other questions? Good question. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Was in a relational family of faith. So you can sometimes, you know, that's that's okay, you know, you can only express your will to take over the relation of family because you have that in the religion. So, the income of admission is always the level of pressure for the religion and young people in the religion.
Just if one reads Chaitanya Charitamrita and hears about the great Vaishnavas, and when Mahaprabhu is experiencing deep separation from Krishna, actually after he took initiation, no other words came from his mouth practically other than, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? He would ask everyone he met, where is Krishna? It was so urgent and real for him. And then if we would have said to him, don't worry about it, if you don't find Krishna, you're going to take your next birth in a Vaishnava family. Don't worry about it, and anyway, you're not your buddy, and you could preach to him. What would he have said? Where is Krishna? That's all he would have said. He wouldn't have listened to anything that we said if we talked like that. In other words, he was on fire. Tatra loyam api muyam ekalam. He was on fire with a desire, an intense desire, because of his ecstasy. He wanted that. He didn't want anything else. So we want that and we want other things. And then so our fire is not burning so brightly. So if we can let our fire burn not brightly for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of lives until something in us makes us want to taste the sweetness of our relationship with Krishna, and we understand who we are. And we also have, but for a sincere devotee, Krishna sometimes, a sincere devotee who has these other attachments, sometimes Krishna will grab you. Wake up, what are you doing? Treading a dangerous path of complacency. Anyway, next time it'll come. I mean, imagine if you said that when we use the example of getting on the train in Bombay sometimes. So if you said you tried to get on the train, there's so many people. Anyway, another train is coming. It might be 3 or 4 weeks before you get to your office or something like that. You might never get there. Is that right? But if someone has love, spontaneous love, then that question doesn't come up. The only question that comes up is, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? How can I find Krishna? Okay, let's stop. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Please pray that Burijan Prabhu can practice what he preaches. Then everything will be okay. And all of your blessings.